Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Here's the host of the show, Bart Blair.
Welcome to the 49th edition of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair. My privilege to welcome you to the show, my privilege to host the show. We've just crossed the 2-year mark on this podcast and really excited about the way that God has been increasing our reach and hopefully that God has been impacting your ministry through this podcast. We've been producing this podcast, as I said, for 2 years, and the purpose is to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. We release 2 episodes every month, one on the 1st of the month and one on the 15th of the month. And just a reminder that if you haven't yet subscribed, be sure that you do that so that you don't miss future episodes. I know that that release schedule can be a little bit wonky because it's not a particular day of the week and it's not a regular weekly thing. But the 1st and the 15th is the schedule that we set on, and we have, for the most part, stuck with it. You'll notice that because we're past a year mark and we're at episode 49, that we did miss a couple somewhere along the way. But we're back on track now and excited about how we're going to be finishing out 2026. That's the year that we're in, the year of our Lord 2026. Well, usually on the 1st of the month, the episode that we feature is a conversation between myself and the executive director of Assist Church Expansion, Mr. Nathan Bryant. Nathan is not with me today. We've had some scheduling challenges with both of us being on the road and a lot of stuff going on. I did, though, have some content that I wanted to share with you that I thought might be easier to deliver if it was just me. So today, you just get me. And I hope that this is helpful and is useful for you. Today, I want to talk about something. It's kind of a pickup of a conversation that Nathan and I had last month. We were talking about your facility, your church building. In fact, I think the episode that we last recorded was called something like, "Does Your Building Help or Hurt Your Church Revitalization?" And we talked a lot about the cosmetic aspects of a church building. Now, the caveat in that conversation was that we're not going to tell you that simply refurbishing your building, making it look nicer and more modern and slapping a fresh coat of paint on it, putting a new sign out front, is going to make a huge difference in the life of your ministry. Those are cosmetic changes. And what we're really most interested in the context of a church revitalization are cultural changes. And honestly, your facility ought to reflect your culture. So as your culture begins to change, as your culture becomes more outward focused, where you are more focused on the one than on the 99 in terms of your ministry, your reach, your evangelism, then your building ought to reflect that. The same thing is true with what we're gonna talk about today, which is your website. A church website is, for the most part, a cosmetic thing, but it ought to effectively reflect the culture of your church and your community. Now, outside of my work with Assist, I spend a lot of time in coaching and consulting with churches in church marketing, digital outreach, SEO, websites, communications, that sort of thing. I spend a lot of time looking at a lot of church websites. And the result of that is I actually see more often than not more wrong in a church website than I see right. In fact, that's not just a small church or a big church thing or a revitalizing church or a healthy church thing. I think that in a lot of cases, a lot of churches misunderstand the best way to leverage their website for reaching people in their community. And so today I want to spend a few minutes talking through a few key points that I think will help you look at your website with some fresh eyes, give you some tasks, some homework that you can walk through and maybe make some improvements on the user experience and your church website. And I'm also gonna talk a little bit about the way that the internet is changing, because the way that people are finding your church online is certainly changing now as a result of AI and artificial intelligence and chatbot searches. So I'm gonna pin that for just a moment. We'll get to that. We're gonna talk first about the user experience on the website, and then we're gonna talk a little bit, I say we, my monologue today will be a talk on some of these key points about the user experience. And then the final part of my monologue will be about how people are actually finding your church online. Now, again, your church website, most of the things I'm going to talk about here on the surface level are going to feel like they're very cosmetic, and they are. But again, I think that they are indicative of the culture that you're trying to build and what you're trying to do in your church community. So I believe that there are 4 critical questions that every new visitor is asking when they come to a church website. And I'm focused primarily in answering these questions for the lost person, for the person who's far from God, for the person who might be completely unchurched or otherwise de-churched. Maybe they have church history, but they haven't been connected in a church for quite some time. The questions that a believer is going to ask are going to be very different than the questions that a non-believer is going to ask. But I also think that a mature or mature-ish growing Christian is better going to be able to discern some of the key things that they're looking for on your church website than a person who is exploring church for the very first time. So I'm going to break this down from the perspective of reaching a lost person online. All right, you ready? I'm going to give you four questions, and I'm going to walk you through each one of these questions and how I think they are best answered. The first question that I think most new people are asking when they come to your church website is not about your doctrine. It's not about your purpose statement. It's not about what your sermon series is this week or this month. The question that they're asking is, you ready? Will I fit in? Is this a community where I will fit in? Is there a place for me? Are the people there like me? Will the people there accept me? Most people who are coming to a church website who don't have a church background, people who are looking for hope, looking for help, looking for answers to some of life's biggest questions, there's an intimidation factor there. Being new in a church can be a very challenging thing. And so one of the things that they're going to be asking is, will I fit in? And how do we communicate through a church website whether or not they will actually fit into our church? Well, one of the primary things that you're going to use is you're going to use images, photos. I think it's really important that the homepage of your website is chock full of photo containers showing body life in your community, not just the church service on Sunday. Yes, there are some things that you can grab and extrapolate from that experience, but I'm not interested in seeing a picture of the building. I'm not interested in seeing a picture of the pastor on the platform. I'm not interested in seeing a picture of your musicians or your worship band. I'm not interested in seeing the backs of a whole bunch of people's heads who are worshiping with their hands up in the air. That's not what I'm interested in. What I'm interested in is seeing what people look like and how they interact with one another in the context of your church community. I want to know if I fit in. There's a lady named Amy Chaney, and if you've ever been on any of my coaching calls, you've probably heard me say this before, but Amy famously said, or I don't know if it's famous, in my mind, said a number of years ago, she said, people are not going to pick your church. Unchurched people are not going to pick your church because you have a great rock band or a cool building or awesome lights and fog machine. They're going to choose your church when they see the eyes of people whose lives have been changed by Christ. Let that sink in for just a moment. They would choose your church when they see the eyes of people whose lives have been changed by Christ. Why? Because ultimately, deep down in their heart, what they're looking for is they're looking for some kind of life change. They're looking for what the believer has. There's something different about the growing disciple of Jesus when their life has been transformed by Jesus. And I think it's often expressed in the way that we laugh, we smile, we interact, we engage with one another. And so your homepage of your website should be full of photos showing what body life looks like in your community. People smiling, engaging with one another, people showing the joy of Jesus Christ. Okay? Now, this is really important. I'm going to pin that for just a moment. The question you're asking now is, well, how do I get those photos? You know, everybody in your church is walking around with one of these. If you're listening, it's a cell phone. The cameras that people have in iPhones today are better than a lot of the DSLR cameras and high-tech digital stuff that you can buy at B&H Photo online, which is a pretty cool store. If you ever have a chance to go to New York and go to B&H Photo, it's pretty cool. You can buy a lot of great equipment there. But most people are walking around with great phones in their pocket. You need to find some people in your church who'd be willing to take photos. And you need to make sure that people in your church are willing to pose for photos. You want to have great photos of people in your church, not stock photos. Not people who are not in your church. This is another question and something else that I see on church websites from time to time. Do not use stock photos of people who don't look like the people in your church. But yes, Bart, all the people in our church are old and we want to reach younger people. So we want to show younger people on our church website. That, my friends, is called a bait and switch. When you lead people to believe that you have young families and kids in your church because you have stock photography on your website showing those people, you're sending a false message. And that's just not authentic. You need to show images that are authentic to who you are. Now, I know you want to reach younger families and you don't have a whole lot of young families in your church. Now you don't, but trust me on this. If you will be authentic to who you are and the community that you have, if your website will truly reflect the culture that exists in your church, God will bring the right people there. And again, whether they're young, old, middle-aged, or otherwise, if their lives have been changed by Christ and we can actually see that in their faces in those photos, doesn't matter what age they are, because people are looking for help. People are looking for hope. People are looking for life change. And that's one of the greatest ways that you can communicate that is through great photos on your homepage. All right. First question people are asking, will I fit in? Second question people are asking, if they have children, which again, most of us are trying to reach families with children, if they have children, the question that they are asking is, what do you have for my kids? So we want to make sure that we have an easy to find navigation page to children's ministry. And if you have a funny, fancy, cool, hip name for your children's ministry, ditch it for a nav bar option that simply says children's ministry or kids or elementary school or whatever it is. Make it plain and simple for what it is. You know, if your children's ministry is called like Rising Stars, that doesn't help anybody because nobody knows that Rising Stars is your children's ministry, okay? We want to call it what it is. Kids ministry, children's ministry, family ministry, elementary school ministry, preschool ministry, toddlers, whatever it is, make sure that it's clear and obvious. Now, again, one of the questions that you're asking me is, well, what do we do if we don't actually have a children's ministry? You've possibly heard me talk about this on this podcast before, and that is this. If you don't have a children's ministry, start one. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Here's the deal. If people show up to your church and you don't have a plan and you're not prepared for them and they have kids, you automatically seal the deal on the likelihood that they're not going to come back. I mean, 99% chance that an unchurched person is not going to come back if they show up with kids and you don't have anything prepared for their kids. Prepare something. Have a plan. I've got one church that I work with that they have children maybe every 3 to 4 weeks, kids that come with grandparents. So what they've done is they've assigned a few ladies in the church to be on a rotation for the children's ministry. They never know which Sundays those kids are going to show up, but each one of them has a plan and each one of them is on the rotation. And when the kids, when that family shows up and they have those kids, guess what? There's a plan. The upside is if anybody else new showed up to the church on a Sunday, they have a plan. They're not executing on the plan every single Sunday because they don't have kids every single Sunday. But when a family does show up, they are prepared for them. That's the plan that you need to put together. So for starters, put a plan together. And if you don't have a plan, we've got a couple of podcast episodes here where you can devise a plan, or I can meet with you and I can help you put together a plan. I'd be happy to do that. Let's put a plan together, have a plan, and then build a page on the website that explains what the plan is. And be honest about where you are. On my church website, our church plant, we're planting a church. We have programs for toddler, preschool, and elementary school. We don't have a lot for upper elementary or middle school. We would love to. We've been honest. We have a frequently asked questions section on our children's ministry page. And one of the questions that we have posed there is, what do you have for middle school and high school or junior high and high school? And the answer is, today we don't have anything. We dream of a day where we will have a middle school and a high school program. But as of right now, we're only serving preschool or toddlers through fifth grade. Okay? And even that is a little bit slim, but we have a plan. And if somebody shows up, we will execute on that plan. My wife and I, when we first started our house church gatherings here, as we were getting ready to plant this church, we dedicated one of the rooms in our house, a bedroom, to be a children's ministry room. And we had a lesson planned and a kids' room ready to go. And we went almost a full year before a family showed up with any kids. We had people come to our house church gatherings and worshiped with us, and some of them are still with us today as we're getting ready to launch this new church. We went a whole year without kids, but we always had a plan, and you need to have a plan, and then you need to explain what that plan is on your church website. Okay, first question, will I fit in? Second question, what do you have for my kids? Third question, this might surprise you. The third question is, who's in charge and can I trust them? That's right. People want to know, need to know who the pastor is. Now, we're going to talk to two different audiences here. You know, you've got some people that might be exploring your church who have a church background, who might even have some church hurt. And sometimes that church hurt comes as a result of leaders in the past that they've had some kind of challenge with. I mean, that's just a reality of the world that we live in. In fact, it's very difficult for me. I get on social media from time to time or turn on the news, and almost daily we hear, read some story about some pastor somewhere who has done something that further taints the reputation of the church and church leaders overall. And, you know, we're all, as pastors and as church leaders, we're all kind of trying to combat some of those reputational hurdles or roadblocks that we might be faced with because of what other pastors and other church leaders do. So here's my recommendation. You have a very easy to find link from your homepage to your staff page or your leadership page. You include all the people that are on your leadership team, include photos, include family photos if you can. And I would say take it a step further. And for your lead pastor or your senior pastor, I'd have a dedicated page for that person. Have family photos, have their biography, not their biography about where they went to seminary and what degrees they have. Remember, the 99 might care about that. The one does not. The one does not care that you went to Dallas Theological Seminary and graduated with an MDiv, and then you went to wherever and got your PhD in Greek and Hebrew studies. They don't care about that. They want to know that you're relatable. I want to hear your faith story. So record it. Record a video of you sharing your faith story, pastor sharing their faith story, and put that on that page. Maybe a little short little interview with pastor and his wife so that you can just share that they're real human beings who really love people, who love serving in the local church, who love the community that they're part of. You are trying to present yourself as relatable and trustworthy as a pastor. That's assuming that you are. If you're not relatable and trustworthy, you probably shouldn't be a pastor. If you are relatable and trustworthy, then make sure that you're highlighting that on your church website. Okay? First question, will I fit in? Second question, what do you have for my kids? Third question, who's in charge and can I trust them? The fourth and the final question, and this one, I know that this one's gonna feel a little bit awkward, but trust me on this. The question is, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? Now, our natural reaction probably ought to be a visceral knee jerk to be like, wait, what do you mean? We shouldn't be looking for a church based on what's in it for us. But remember, we're not speaking to the 99, we're speaking to the one, we're speaking to the lost person. Yes, church shoppers, those people that bounce around from church to church looking for the best worship experience and the best preaching, that's the question that they're asking too, and shame on them. They need to be discipled out of that. But for the lost person, the neighbor, the person in your community who has no church background, who does not know anything about Jesus other than what they read on the Wikipedia page, that person needs to know what's in it for them. And your purpose statement or your vision statement is not what's in it for them. Your doctrinal statement is not what's in it for them. Your rally cry as a church to go on mission for Jesus is not what's in it for them. You need to speak to them, their needs, their hurts, their hopes, their hangups, and you need to answer the question that you think they are asking. And this could go a lot of different ways, but it needs to be one of the first things that they see on the homepage of your website. It could be something simply like, you're looking to live a life with more purpose and more meaning. We're here to help. Or you're wrestling with some of life's biggest questions and you need answers. We're here to help you get those answers. You're curious about God, faith, and the Bible and don't know where to start. We're here to help you take your first steps on a journey towards God. Whatever it might be, whatever you think the questions are, position your statement, your benefit statement towards that person who doesn't yet know Jesus, who needs to know why coming to your church is going to make a difference for them. Here are some phrases that I beg you to avoid on the homepage of your website. Do not put your vision statement or your purpose statement, especially if it's related to finding and seeking lost people, okay? Just don't do that. Do not put your church slogan, reaching up, reaching in, reaching out. What does that mean? That doesn't help the outsider. Please do not use the phrase, welcome home. There was a season in the late 20-teens and the early 2020s where virtually every church website that I went to had welcome home above the fold on their website. Your church is not their home. It's not their home. It's never going to be their home. And that's not what people are looking for. Now, they're looking for community. They're looking for connection. So, you know, you might put something like find your tribe here or find your people here or make friends and get connected in community here, right? But not welcome home. Okay. Don't do that. You know, just think through it. Think through how you want to communicate that benefit statement. But the benefit statement will be most beneficial if you truly know who God is calling you to reach. If you've really dialed in on who in your community God has uniquely positioned your church to reach, you will better be able to come up with that benefit statement that communicates something to them. And by the way, you can update that benefit statement from time to time. Put something on there and see if it works for a while. And if it doesn't work, try something new, right? Your website is not a static brochure that you just printed 10,000 copies of and you have to go hand out and you can't reprint it until, you know, change it until you reprint it and you're not going to reprint it until you hand them all out. No, you can update the website anytime. So try different things. Okay, four questions. Will I fit in? What do you have for my kids? Who's in charge? Can I trust them? And what's in it for me? The benefit statement. Now, I'm gonna pivot the conversation a little bit. That's all about user experience. That's all about making sure that your website is designed in a way that speaks to the lost person, to the one, not to the 99, okay? But here's the other question. How are people finding your website today? The internet is changing at a breakneck pace. And this is not a joke. It is seriously changing. In fact, I saw a tweet on Twitter, well, an X on X. I don't know what you call that. A tweet on X the other day. It was a pastor saying that they had a newcomer lunch and there were four families that came to the newcomer lunch. And One of the families had come from an AI search, two came from Google, one came from a personal invitation, okay? What's different about that today than a year ago? Well, a year ago, hardly anybody would have said they were coming from an AI search. People would have said, oh, I found you on Google, or somebody invited me, or I drove by and I saw your building or your sign, right? Those are the primary ways that people would find a church. But today, we're seeing more and more frequently, people are saying, I found you in ChatGPT. I found your church in Grok. I found your church in Perplexity or AI mode in Google or Gemini or whatever it is. So we need to know and understand how the internet is changing, because it really does change the way that we need to structure our website. Now, you may be familiar with a phrase. It's called search engine optimization, or SEO. That's what people would call it. And SEO is basically the technical alignment or the technical construction of your website that ensures that when Google reads your website, it's extrapolating the proper information and it's indexing you in its memory banks for answering the right questions. And when somebody goes and does a Google search, Google provides a search engine result page. They call it a SERP page, S-E-R-P, search engine result page. And it gives you like 20 options. And then your job is to go filter through those 20 options and figure out which one really answers the question that you were looking for. But that's not the way that AI works. AI is much more conversational. And what AI is doing, and I'll use ChatGPT as the primary example, because I think that's kind of it's the Google of the AI world. It's what most people tend to be using. It's more conversational. So rather than simply Googling churches near me, someone might open up their chat bot in ChatGPT and say, I just moved to Springfield, Illinois. I'm looking for a church that's great for families. What are the best churches in this area for kids with in second grade and fourth grade? I mean, that's a really long prompt, right? And what ChatGPT is going to do is ChatGPT is going to write a paragraph and make recommendations based on what it finds online. And here's the catch. Most church websites do not have enough content and enough information on them, nor is it structured in a way that the AI chatbots can effectively find it and extrapolate it. So what the AI chatbots are going to do is they're going to search the entire internet, look at your entire digital footprint, and extrapolate information from there. So rather than simply using your church website, ChatGPT will also look at Reddit threads, which, by the way, if your church is mentioned in Reddit threads, it's probably not good, because I don't think there's anything good ever written about a church in Reddit. Not much you can control there, but it'll look at your Google reviews. It'll look at your Yelp reviews and your Yelp profile. It'll look at other websites such as Yellow Pages and Hot Frog and Dex Knows, and there's a whole bunch of them out there. In fact, if you started Googling your church and you found all the directory listings that your church exists in, or maybe it doesn't, that it needs to, such as Yelp, you'll find that you can claim those directory listings, and then you can actually update the profile information in there. Better yet, you can then ask people to write reviews of your church. Just write one or two sentences about the favorite things about your church. And what that does is it builds online sentiment for your church. And when people say, what's a good church, or what do people think about this church, where do you think ChatGPT and the other AI models are getting that information? They're reading it from reviews. There's a proverb that says, let the lips of someone else praise you, not from your own mouth. I've said this to churches many, many times. What other people say about you is more important than what you say about yourself, okay? So Google reviews, Yelp reviews, reviews on Hot Frog and Dex Knows and some of these other platforms, really, really important. But let's go back to the website for a minute. What some of the experts are telling us is that our websites contain far too little content on them. You remember back in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, while everybody was still on dial-up, our websites were pretty much, you know, text-based websites. They didn't have many images. You may have had some flashing GIFs or something like that, but there was no video embedded. There were no images, because it just took too long for those pages to load. Then when the internet got fast and people had high-speed internet, then with the pendulum swung the other direction, and we basically went to websites that were more visually oriented and didn't have a whole lot of copy, because we're like, well, people won't read it. Well, now we kind of have to swing the pendulum back the other direction, and we need to have more copy on our website. Why? Because ChatGPT can't look at your website from a user experience and form an opinion. It needs you to provide the information for it. Okay, so here's an example. This is what the experts are telling us. The average homepage, in order to work effectively with an AI tool, needs to probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 words on the homepage. 1,500 words is a blog post. Now, I'm not saying you write a blog post for your homepage. There are strategies on how you would do this, but the average church website that I've been on has roughly 250 to 350 words. Okay, here's an exercise for you. Go to your church website and do a little Control F or Command F and search for the word church and see how many times the word church shows up on your homepage. It should be probably about 20 or 30 times. Search the name of the community that you're in or the communities that your church serves. See how many times it shows up. If it's only showing up one time in the footer of the website, it's not enough. It needs to be in there more frequently. How about the words Bible, the word Christian, the words family? What are the things that you want your church to be known for specifically by the AI models? If you don't have the words, the phrases, and the content on your website, then it simply will not know. And so you need to feed the machine. I've jokingly said to people many times that the A in AI does not stand for accurate. It is artificial intelligence, not accurate information, okay? So in order for us to make sure that we're not only showing up, but that we're showing up for the right searches with the right answers, we have to provide the answers for the AI model, okay? This is really, really important. There's two pieces to the puzzle here. Now, here's what I would encourage you to do. I don't have time to do a deep dive on the how-to, but here's a simple exercise you can go through. Take one of the pages from your website, you can start with your homepage, and go to Claude AI, that's my favorite AI tool, and paste your URL, your homepage URL, and say, Claude, I would like to better optimize my homepage for AI search. I know that I need to probably improve the copy and increase the copy. Give me some suggestions and help me better optimize this page for AI search, and see what Claude says. Claude will probably give you very specific directives on what you need to do and how you need to improve it, what kind of copy you can add, how much more you need to write. It can even help you massage and write the copy, okay? I know that there's a lot of debate in the church world about what we should be using AI for these days. No, you should not be using AI to write your sermons. Yes, you can use AI to do research for your sermons or maybe even give you some feedback on your sermons. Don't use AI to write your sermons, but there are a lot of things that you can use AI for, such as throwing your web pages into AI and saying, please evaluate this for me. I want to reach people that are far from God. What does this communicate to them? Secondly, I know I need to improve this page for AI search. Give me some pointers. Tell me what I need to do. Then do what it tells you to do. Now, the other component that needs to be included on your website is probably, and what Claude is probably going to tell you, is that you need to have structured data or schema markup on the page. That's code that goes on the back end of the page. Now, most of us, pastors, church leaders, we don't have any idea how to write schema or structured data. But guess what? AI does. Claude can write it for you, okay? It can be a little bit laborious because there is a little bit of trial and error and making sure that it doesn't does it properly for you. But you can have Claude write the schema for you and then give you instructions on how to actually install it on whatever website platform you're on. If you're on WordPress or Squarespace or Wix or whatever your platform is, you can then add that code. What that code is behind the scenes is it is the code, the first piece of content that the AI models and Google actually read to decide what you're an expert in. Now, go to your secondary web pages, not just your homepage. Go to your ministry pages, and we'll use the children's ministry page as an example. You can do this for children's ministry, women's ministry, small group ministry, your giving page, you name it. And you need to probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,200 to 1,500 words that describe what it is, when it meets, what you're there to accomplish, who's invited, what people say about it. Extrapolate, lots of content on there, and photos. Remember, don't forget photos, because people need to be able to see themselves connected in those ministries. Now, I'm really big on FAQs on those pages. And the reason for that is because FAQs, if I'm doing FAQs on those pages properly, I'm predicting what I think people might be asking the AI model. And if I'm predicting what I think they're asking, then I give a very direct and specific answer, which AI can then grab and provide that answer to the user, right? So I gave this example earlier on our children's ministry page on the FAQs. What do you have for middle school and what does Bear Creek Community Church have for middle school and high school students? And I given the answer. Now, again, this is really important. I use this as an example. I was doing some research on how my church was showing up in AI. And this is one of the things that I realized is that I was using either Gemini or AI mode in Google. And I was asking very specific questions. And the answers that I was getting, you'll notice when you get those AI searches, oftentimes it'll give you the little fave icon, which is like the little logo that's on your website. And like the first five or six bullet points, the first five or six statements had my logo from my church on it. And then I got down to like the seventh or the eighth statement, and all of a sudden I realized those were different logos. And believe it or not, my church is not the only church in the United States of America called Bear Creek Community Church. And so when AI couldn't find all the details that it needed, It just went out and found other church websites that were called Bear Creek Community Church, and it pulled that information, giving the answer as if it was part of my church. What that did for me was it highlighted that I had some gaps in my information that I needed to further flesh out. Remember, the AI, the A in AI does not stand for accurate, okay? It's artificial intelligence, not accurate information. So that's a great exercise for you to go through. And for those of you who have a church name like Grace Fellowship or Grace Community or Grace Church or Cornerstone or Crosspoint, you know what I'm talking about. Or Hope, like there's a million churches in our country. Well, maybe not a million. There's thousands of churches that share your name. You need to make sure that your website is fully comprehensive, answering those questions that you think people are asking, and then it's structured properly so that the AI models can actually find it. That's all I got. I know this is a lot, probably drinking from a fire hose for most of you, because part of this is the user experience and part of it is more technical, but I believe it's important. Again, the website is not the end all be all. Having a great website is not going to solve your revitalization problem, but your website could certainly be a hindrance to people wanting to connect with your church and taking those first steps of joining you on a Sunday morning to find out whether or not your community is the right fit for them. So hope this has been helpful. Love your feedback. If you haven't ever left us a rating or a review for this podcast, we'd love for you to do that. You can do that on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. If you're watching on our YouTube channel, let's engage. Go ahead and leave a comment or ask a question. What was helpful in this for you? What was not? And I'll be happy to engage with you there. And we can continue to learn and grow together. On behalf of our whole team at Assist Church Expansion, this has been episode 49 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks.